At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Experian. Are you paying for subscriptions you don't use, but can't find the time or energy to cancel them? Experian could cancel unwanted subscriptions for you, saving you an average of $270 per year and plenty of time. Download the Experian app. Results will vary. Not all subscriptions are eligible. Savings are not guaranteed. Paid membership with connected payment account required.
Good morning and welcome to episode 73 of the Jaguar Report podcast. My name is Gus Logue, joined as always by my co-host, John Shipley. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing good. It's already a bit of a weird week with them playing on Monday next week. It's already kind of shifted things around, but right. I'm doing good, man. I enjoyed the heck out of Sunday. I thought, just from like a fan of the game, you know, I thought it was one of the better NFL games I've watched this year.
Totally.
It's great that Stroud, Offensive Rookie of the Year 69, and all of the similar Twitter accounts take any perceived slight and run with them. Dude, sports fans have become the worst part on Twitter. It's becoming bad, man. You say like a half compliment, and yeah. Yeah, you compliment somebody and it becomes a slight, and it's crazy. It's crazy, but no, doing good, man. How you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. I think I've been a little bit less online than you have in the past 24 hours, so I'm doing great. It was definitely a really good game to watch. The Eagles Bills game kind of stole the show for like the whole slate of games, but Jaguars Texans definitely lived up to all the hype. I feel very vindicated for the second week in a row, so can't complain.
Yeah. Every week's a Calvin Ridley week. You're right.
That's not even what I was talking about, but yeah, sure, I'll take credit for that.
50% of the time, it's right 100% of the time.
Well, that was true for the first half of the season, but now it's like, I mean, you know what the second half of the season means for the Jaguars. It's a real trend now, because a couple weeks ago, I was like, it's kind of like a you can't actually rely on like second half of season production and like just assume that the Jags are going to go on the stretch similar to the way that they did last year. But I mean, we're kind of starting to see it unfold right in front of our eyes.
Yeah. I mean, Doug Peterson has them there. They're 11-3 in November, December, and January. 11-4 in December, November, and January. And Doug Peterson, which, you know, the beauty of the NFL is that every game does matter, but you would definitely prefer to get hot at the end of the year and start playing your best football at this time of the year than, you know, playing good football at the beginning of the season. And that's definitely what they've shown. You know, I mean, of those four losses, two came in Kansas City last year, two to Super Bowl champions. One came against the 49ers this year, just a complete buzzsaw of a game. And then one came last year on the road against a surging Lions team that started to resemble more so this year's Lions team than their record last year indicated. So, I mean, they've definitely figured out how to play their best ball at the right time of the year, which I think is the biggest thing, you know, from yesterday is the fact that, yeah, like losing a divisional game in week three and losing it in the manner they did is obviously unideal, but it's much more important to get that win later in the year.
Totally. I remember after like weeks two and three that someone in the media room was like, oh, thank goodness they lost this game or these two games, because like it would have been bad news if they had like won these and like had been like peaking at the wrong time. And like it was said as a joke and it was like funny as a joke, but like there's definitely a little bit of truth to that too. It's like you don't want to, not so much that you don't want to peak too early, but you just want to make sure you're peaking at the right time. The Jags definitely seem to be peaking right now. They won 24-21 was the final score if you didn't catch it. I guess we can start off with Jaguars offense against Texans defense. What did you see from that matchup, John? That you like?
Super explosive offense. They had, I think it was four plays of over 40 yards, all, you know, passing plays. Big plays in the screen game, big plays downfield, and in terms of yards after the catch. I think they said yesterday that, like, they had more yards after the catch yesterday, they said on the broadcast, than they had in all the 10 games previously combined. So, obviously, you know, it looked like the offense has really found its footing in the last 2 weeks. And, like, I think quality of opponent obviously has something to do with it, because the Texans and Titans, like, they clearly aren't the 49ers defense. But, I mean, the Jags offense the last 2 weeks, Trevor Lawrence has the highest EPA per play of any quarterback in the last 2 weeks. He was number two this week, only behind Dak Prescott, who had like four touchdowns and almost 400 yards on Thanksgiving against a team that fired its defensive coordinator the next day. They've allowed one sack in the last 2 weeks, and that one sack was Lawrence, like, scrambling and running out of bounds, like, short of the line of scrimmage. Right. I mean, really, like, the only thing I can say yesterday that's, like, a negative about the offense is some of the drops. And, if you had just, like, eliminate, like, half of the drops they had yesterday, like, Kirk, I can understand losing that one in the sun. I'm not sure how the sun gets into that. Like, it's a dome.
Little window, wasn't it?
Literally the one part of the field where sun is at. And
hey, that's just how accurate 16 is, okay?
Yeah. And then Derek Stingley made a great play against Zay Jones on that third down to force him out of bounds. But, I mean, just three drops off the top of my head. Evan Ingram drop, Dearness Johnson drop on the last drive that probably would have got like 10 or so yards, and then Calvin Ridley's drop touchdown. Lawrence is pretty close to having like a 400-yard day, dude.
Yeah, dude. It's crazy. He set a career high in total expected points added, which is just like the best statistic, the best advanced stat out there that just like adds the right context, or just adds the most context of any other stat, basically. And so it's wild that he had like a career day efficiency wise and had all of these like huge drops. I mean, well, the Kirk one was pretty deep too, but like the Ridley one would have been a 30-yard touchdown. So obviously that would have like spiked up his numbers even more. But then even like getting completions on the short one to Engram, the short one to Dearness, the medium one to Kirk, like would have just buoyed that up. So
is there something to?
I think. Go ahead.
Is there something to Lawrence? Just, I don't know. I feel like every quarterback is a rhythm quarterback, but like him especially, it feels like once he gets hot, like during the season, he just like kind of stays in that zone. Like we saw it last year with the games against the Ravens, the Raiders, the Titans, the Cowboys, and then these last 2 weeks are probably like. I'd say like the two best games he's played, honestly, the last four games, probably three of the best games he played has come in them. You know, if you count the Steelers game, obviously the 49ers game was terrible, but I don't know, man. Three out of the last 4 weeks, he's played really good football. And I think like, I don't want to call it like late season Trevor, but I don't know, a second year in a row where it seems like just a switch gets flipped once they get to near November. And I don't know if there's something to that. Like, he just gets more comfortable as the season goes along. Maybe it's he's more comfortable with Ridley now. But whatever reason there is, he's playing his best, you know, like the team in general is playing their best football right now. But that's also because he is. And it is very funny that after everybody spent a week basically throwing Press Taylor to the Wolves, that the Jaguars have had probably their two best offensive games since.
Yeah, he's been cooking. I think the like if you had to narrow down one reason, it's the offensive line, just because obviously they didn't have a very good performance against the Niners. And then, as you put it, like Lawrence has only taken one sack in the past 2 weeks, and the one sack was barely even really a true sack. Yeah. But I think also like you can look at like the sack numbers and those are good, but also just like looking at the plays that they're calling, it seems like so much more diverse than it was just a month ago. We talked a lot last week about how like play action really opened up the playbook a little bit for the Jaguars against the Titans. And then it was the same thing this week, but then it was like, I don't know, play action, screens, the RPO obviously didn't work on Trevor's one interception, but I don't know. I feel like in both like the passing and running game, it's been a lot more diverse and they've been able to kind of just like hit different buttons I think a big reason for that is like just that the offensive line has kind of grown more comfortable together. And then like the cherry on top, I guess, or like the exclamation point to that is the fact that Cam Robinson left the game in sometime in the first half. I think it was the first quarter and didn't return with a knee injury. So then Walker Little slides to left tackle and Ezra Cleveland slides into left guard. And there's pretty much no drop off whatsoever. So that's obviously big time.
The greatest bulky ball of them all. that doesn't even need to be a bulky ball today because we saw it yesterday. You know, oh, starting left tackle goes down. That's fine.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. Would you rather have 32 6th-round picks or the Jaguars' offensive line depth from yesterday?
32 6th-round picks?
Yeah.
The offensive line depth.
There you go. That's bulky ball. That's bulky ball, man. An entire round of 6th-round picks. Is it worth what they got out of the offensive line yesterday? Tell me I'm wrong.
No, no, you're right. It's just that sometimes you like throw me because it's so insane that you just like throw me with the prompt sometimes.
Yeah, 100%.
No, you're right. Once I think it through, you get pokeballed.
I don't know. It's a dumb argument to make because Cam got injured on the second drive of the game, but I was gonna say I almost think the offensive line looked better with Cleveland. Dude, the broadcast said like four times. It's like yesterday, like, yeah, Doug Peterson says they think Little's a tackle. And I'm like, yeah, he obviously is.
Right.
Probably shouldn't be playing guard. like it's just become very clear over these last few weeks that Little is a left tackle. Cleveland is a left guard. And I know Cam Robinson obviously brings a ton to them in terms of intensity and leadership, etc. But like the big thing is the fact that, you know, Peterson said today that he basically gave zero information on Robinson's knee injury.
I know. I was going to ask if you had, like, any kind of pulse on it, because based on Cam's reaction on the sidelines and then the fact that he was ruled out for the game, I was assuming major injury. But then today, when Doug was so noncommittal about it, I'm like, oh, maybe it's like he could actually come back.
I think just reading the tea leaves that he escaped major injury, I think the fact that he came back to the sideline, like, I think – I mean, he's just an emotional guy, you know. I mean, middle of the game, biggest game of the year to that point, probably just absolutely didn't want to come off the field. So I think that's probably more what it had to do with. But it's crazy that they can potentially lose their starting left tackle for an undetermined period of time, and it doesn't really matter. It's kind of completely a blip on their radar because they have that depth that, you know, maybe at the moment feels like, you know, at certain moments feels like overkill, kind of like when they drafted Walker to begin with. But then, one, like we talked about last year, how they don't go to the playoffs if they don't have that offensive tackle depth. I mean, it's showing up again this year, you know. So for all the criticism the offensive line has faced, you know, some credit to them for throwing resources at it even during the season to kind of cover all of the bases. And yeah, that was the greatest bulky ball of them all. It's 3D chess. Oh, a left tackle gets hurt. Time for Trent to look like a genius.
Time for Trent to look like a genius. That's right. Yeah, I mean, and then the flip side, it's like, I mean, we'll get to the defense in a few seconds here, but like the Jags keep seeming like they have a pass rush problem, and it keeps like not really mattering that much. And, like, as we've always said, like, the pass rush problem will, like, mostly matter once we get to the playoffs. But it's definitely, like, looking like a good move by Balky at the deadline to focus more on offensive line than the defensive trenches.
So, is the offense fixed, or is this just a short-term kind of explosion where they're just playing good ball against teams they're familiar with?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. Like, I think, like, this week against the Bengals – I don't know. Like, I don't really know what to expect right now before like diving into it, because like on one hand, I know Big Lou is like one of the best defensive game planners in the league, but the Bengals defense has also been like getting pretty torched recently and have led up a ton of explosive plays. And obviously that's what the Jags have been doing really well recently. So it'd be interesting to see in that game, whether like, was it like just the fact that you were facing like the Texans and the Titans, now that you're up against Big Lou, like they'll cool off a little bit. But I think if like they continue to do what they've been doing the past 2 weeks against the Bengals, even though their defense isn't as good this year as it was last year, then we'll be able to be like, okay, this is like a legit turnaround, and look out for the Jags offense, not just their defense.
Calling him Big Lou kills me, by the way. It's a good bit. So I think Ben Solak with the Ringer tweeted this out, but the last 2 weeks have been like the biggest weeks the Jaguars have had in terms of intended air yards. So basically these have been the 2 weeks that they've been pushing the ball more. And I don't think it's a coincidence that that comes on the heels of Doug Peterson saying that he, in a press conference after 49ers loss, that he thinks they can be more aggressive with that. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the biggest reason they've been able to push the ball more? Is it the offensive line playing better? Is it Trevor playing better? Is it Zay Jones and his, you know, one catch for 10 yards making the impact? Like, what is it to you that is the reason that the offense is finally starting to let it fly a little bit downfield? Because those first like 2 months or so of the season, they literally, it felt like there was like zero desire to push the ball downfield. And I know a lot of that probably had to do with, you know, the offensive line, but.
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with like getting personnel into the right place. Like we saw this for the Jaguars last year when they moved Darius Williams from the nickel to outside cornerback. And like, it's definitely a generalization, but after they did that, all of a sudden the Jaguars' defense started playing. And so I think now what you've seen is personnel moves in the offensive line, as we just covered with like Walker playing left guard and then moving out to tackle once Kane went down, and now having Ezra Cleveland. So now that you kind of like, now that Walker's gone a little bit healthier and you have Ezra in the building, and then also that they're like using Calvin Ridley just more better is maybe the biggest one. And like, it's funny that I don't think Zay Jones's return has like actually had that much of like a direct influence. I think like his return just kind of like happened to have an influence, and it was more of like the offensive line getting healthy had a bigger impact than Zay Jones getting healthy. But like, he's been used like out of the slot more. He's been used like over the field more. It really felt like 90% of his routes were just like straight up or near the sideline in the first month or two of the season. But now it feels like he's been used pretty much all over the place. And I think part of that is that like he and Lawrence have definitely like built their chemistry up throughout the season. But I think the Jags coaches have also like just done a better job of like understanding where they can use him. And like, I think kind of like how we were talking about last week, Jay Stroud, and like this second game was easier now that they had a bunch of film. Like, it's almost easier like from the other side, where it's like when you only have like a new star receiver for the first two or three games, like especially in his case, since he had almost 2 years off from the game of football, like you can't expect him to do everything immediately. And so you got to figure it out as you go along. And so it definitely was a little bit frustrating that it took this long for like Ridley to kind of like start producing like a true number one receiver every week. But I don't know. We did get to that point, so that's nice.
That route on his touchdown at the goal line, that was sick. You know, that's go and find it if you can. I think Dan Orlovsky had a nice breakdown of it. Like, that is number one receiver stuff. That route that he had against Derek Stingley on, I think it was in the second half on like a
just like a 10-yard out. That was awesome.
Yeah,
Just the touchdown was a good example of like good coaching and play calling by Press, because they ran a similar play last week. And honestly, they've run like a similar red zone concept. Going back to training camp, we watched run an out going like outwards in the end zone at two different depths. And so they like got that for a score with Ridley last week. And then this week, like Ridley broke it. So we're kind of finally seeing what it looks like for a star wide receiver to be schemed up well.
Yeah, no, 100%. And you know, I thought yesterday was Press Taylor's best game of the year too. You know, I thought Press, yeah, especially that first half was very much, you know, like in his bag, coming up with, you know, good concepts to really stretch Houston both vertically and horizontally. They got Lawrence out the pocket. He stuck to the run, even though their running game wasn't there at all. Like, I think Etienne had 56 yards and 20 carries, and like 20 of those yards came on one run at the end of the game. So he did a good job, I thought, of not getting away from the run. Maybe that's where like he's learned his biggest lesson in the last few weeks. So you would say that Trevor's three best games this year are the last 2 weeks in the Buffalo game, right?
Yeah.
Those are the only games this year he's had an average depth of target over 9 yards. So it's very clear that, like, the more they push, like, the more aggressive they are, the better quarterback he just, you know, like, he just is. Like,
free Trevor.
Yeah, man. Like he
let Trevor cook.
I get it. I get what they were doing with the offense for that first, you know, half of the season, but turning him into Alex Smith is not how you're going to win with this quarterback. You know, like it just isn't. You know, you have to let him be him and, you know, be the aggressor. My last thing I want to talk to you about, what were your thoughts on, you know, not the decision to go for it at the end of the first half, because I feel like most people, like the consensus said, they would have gone for it. But what are your thoughts on that specific play call? Because I will say, at another point in the game, the Jaguars had the ball at the 1 yard line, and it took them like 5 plays to score because they needed the flag, and then they didn't score until third down anyways.
Right.
Have you ever trusted a team less to gain a yard?
Honestly, no.
Like they're ton of talent on the offense, freak at quarterback, but when they have the ball at the 1 yard line, I have no idea how they're going to score other than Lawrence just leaping over. So, what are your thoughts on that issue and then that just whole play in general?
Yeah, I kind of thought that like the running game would need to improve, like especially just being able to like have the running back put his head down and charge behind the offensive lineman for a yard or two. Like getting good at those types of like ugly plays and ugly runs is like how I thought the Jags would end up being able to succeed in the red zone. And we just like haven't really seen that yet. It feels like they're like barely even running too. It's like they kind of know where their bread isn't buttered and they know that that's a little bit of a weakness for them. And so like they're just kind of letting Lawrence let it rip in the red zone. I don't know what they're going to do until like Tank Bigsby becomes the player that they keep saying that he is. Muted. You're muted. Johnny boy. John, you're muted.
Sorry. It was my gene error. Sorry.
You're going off for a while.
Yeah. I was going to say, like, they had a whole like spiel this week about how, you know, they think Tank's turning a corner and they have confidence in him, and then he gets one carry in the game. Like, it's clear they only want him to play like first and down and maybe some second downs. But I'm with you. Like, you literally drafted the guy for those situations. Like, eventually, part of me dings the play call because it kind of felt obvious that's what they were going to do when they broke the huddle. And like Houston was clearly, you know, ready for it immediately. The other part of me, though, we've seen that exact play call work at different times this season. Like, I think that was the same play that they got their 2-point conversion on against the Steelers. But ultimately, you know, I don't know what the solution is, because it seemed like they thought the solution was just get a more physical running back. And that clearly has not been the case. I know he has 2 goal line touchdowns this year, but I don't know. I don't think they, in their right mind, could have put him in the game in that situation. Because I don't think – like, even if it worked, I don't think anybody would have said that was a good idea. So, I don't know. It's a tough one to figure out. But I definitely feel like in terms of the offense improving by leaps and bounds, that's, like, the one area right now where they're still, like –
then
Yeah.
Pass-catching drops are, like, the two big ones. You mentioned drops earlier.
How many drops do you think they had yesterday?
I mean, we counted 4 at this.
Yeah, PFF has them with 4, which I think is fair. I think it's fair. So, yeah. I mean,
the only thing I thought was like questionable was the De'Ernest one because he had to reach his hand out, but it still did hit him in the hand.
In terms of Trevor, I thought, again, like going back to our earlier point, I thought there were only two throws that he should want back from that game. One of them was a second and goal play where it looked like he had Luke Farrell open and he just hesitated and held the ball like for a tick
late. Oh, yeah.
Threw it a little bit late. I think Farrell probably still could have caught it, but ultimately he should have made it easier on him. Like the defender never should have been over there. And then on the last drive of the game, on a play action rollout, he had Farrell for a first down and threw it just behind him, like just a little bit late. And the nickel broke it up. But I thought, other than those two plays, I don't know if there's a throw off the top of my head I think Lawrence should want back.
It was an unbelievable performance. Honestly, maybe my best throw of the day, or my favorite throw of the day, was the screen pass to De'Ernest. I'm pretty sure, because I think it was like off play action and then a little bit of pressure in his face, and he like floated it over multiple offensive linemen before De'Ernest even turned his head around. So like, it was just really impressive and cool to see the amount of touch on that pass after we saw him like throwing missile launchers the rest of the afternoon, especially that one to Ridley where I think it was Stingley who like couldn't get the hand on it and he just like fit it in between the defender, like almost like the Colts one. I was talking to my friends about this. They were like, on that type of pass, are you like telling Trevor to like, that's a good pass or that's a bad pass?
I don't know.
I decided it's a good pass because he has like the arm strength to do it. But I, like, if I saw Gardner Minshew complete that pass, I would say, don't you ever attempt that again.
You're not wrong. That's where I went. Yeah, no, you're not wrong. Gus, anything else on the offense?
Let's get to defense.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. All right, Gus. Props to Mike Caldwell, man. Again, I feel like we say this literally every week. I know. CJ Stroud, 3 touchdowns. He had over 300 yards, like probably nearly 350 scrimmage yards. And I still felt like it was a really good game of Mike Caldwell, dude. Like, maybe that's like the standard that CJ Stroud has earned so far, because so I thought Lawrence was better than Stroud yesterday, but I thought Stroud was really freaking good. Like, I thought he was really freaking good.
I definitely agree that Lawrence was better yesterday. I thought Stroud played better in week 3 than he did yesterday.
Ooh, really?
Yeah, you think that's a hot take? He looked good yesterday, but, like, not as good as he could have been. I don't know. Because, like
– missed a couple deep throws.
Yeah, missed a couple deep throws. And, like, obviously, like, it's hard to tell, like, what he could have done differently just by watching from the broadcast angle, especially with like how often the Jaguars like put a bunch of bodies into coverage, then it's like there might not have just been any answers for him. And that's why he held on to the ball and like scrambled some. But I also like would have liked to see a little bit more playmaking from him, honestly, just with how much time he did have. Like, I feel like he probably could have been quicker to scramble and kind of like ruin the Jaguars' plan that way a little bit. And, like, I don't know. He didn't, like, really attempt that many tight window throws. He and Trevor both averaged, like, 13% tight window throw on the season, according to next-gen stats. But on Sunday, it was 15% for Lawrence and then for Stroud. And so, like, he definitely made some awesome throws. But, all the great throws that I remember him making were – not necessarily into like tight coverage. Like, it wasn't like the type of throw that like Trevor made or Ridley on that one route that you just described, where it was like a 10-yard in then out against Derek Stingley, and like there was just like one spot where the ball could go. So I don't know. I thought Stroud was like good, but not like I was definitely more impressed by his week 3 showing.
Yeah, and that, I don't know. I feel like they asked him, like, he had to do more this week. I feel like there were easier plays for him to get in week 3 than there were this week. I feel like the degree of difficulty was turned up a bit this week. I mean, one of his best plays was negated by a penalty, that like 60-yard bomb to Tank Dell. I personally think he was better this week, just like because the Jaguars pass rush was actually there this week. This was the best the Jaguars pass rush has looked, in my opinion, all season. Their interior defensive line, you know, we've talked about it on here several times, has struggled this year. But here's the pass rush win rates from PFF from yesterday. Josh Allen, 15.6%. Great showing. Trayvon Walker, 3.3%. Moving on. Will Robinson Harris, 18.5%. One of his best games of the year. Foley Fadakasi, 23.1%. His best game of the year. Adam Gaufsis, 17.6%. His best game of the year. Like, they literally got the best pass rushing performance out of their entire interior defensive line individually and as a whole than they had all season. And you could tell that was frustrating Stroud. You could tell, like, the different looks the Jaguars had. We both talked about it, how, you know, maybe the Jaguars' strategy this week should be to not blitz. And we did see them blitz some, like on third down. I didn't think they blitzed much on early downs, but they did a lot of, and D'Amico said this after the game, he was like, they did a lot of drop eight stuff, which is, you know, rush three, drop eight in coverage. That, yeah, exactly. That confused him. And I thought Stroud was at his best when the Jaguars were bringing extra blitzers. So Mike Caldwell, you know, like, they forced punts on each of the Texans' first three series. They forced turnover on downs near midfield with like 10 minutes left in the game, you know, forcing completions on third and one and then fourth and one. And then the sacks that they got, you know, at the end of the game, like that, it was great calls, you know, from the defense. I thought that it was one of Mike Caldwell's best games as Jaguars defense coordinator in general, which is weird because Stroud's still put up numbers, but
right.
It was impressive. And I thought, you know, obviously the hero of the game to me is Josh Allen. They don't win that game without that Josh Allen performance, I don't think. Mm-hmm.
It literally reminded me of Dame time in Portland, like the way he just like turned up in the fourth quarter. There was, especially like, because in basketball it's fun because like players will like take over games and do a lot in crunch time in like a 40-second span sometimes. And then like NFL games are kind of like spread out a little bit. Like sometimes like it'll take 30 minutes to like finish the last 2 minutes of a game. So like that's why it was so cool to see Josh Allen like take the game over the way that he did. It's because like you just don't really see that as much in football. And so I definitely agree that they wouldn't have won without Josh Allen. And the game plan and like outcome reminds me a lot of the Bills game back in week 4, because like Josh Allen had a really good performance then, like statistically, but if you watch the game, you knew that like the Jaguars' defense kind of had his hand for most of the contest. But I say most because like I think in both of these games especially, but like also just for the whole season in general, like Caldwell has shown just how good of a in-game game planner he is, or in-game adjuster that he is, because usually the Jags start off great and like force a couple punts in a row like they did against the Texans this week and against the Bills. And then like we saw in both games, the offense will kind of like make some of their own adjustments and be able to like come back, which is expected because their offenses are such high powered with such good quarterbacks. But then again, in both of these games, we saw the Jaguars' defense get the job done late and kind of like come back with adjustments of their own. And so I think like the fact that they're so good in the first and fourth quarters, especially, like really help out the team.
Is Josh Allen the defensive player of the year candidate to you at this point? I think he is. I think that, you know, 12 sacks, 22 quarterback hits, I think 10 tackles for loss, among the league leaders in pressures and win rate. I know, obviously, you don't hand out the awards based on that, but it's like looking at his, you know, resume, the forced turnovers are there. He's playing for a good team. You know, if they continue to get hype over these next few weeks, like, is he like a Miles Garrett in a shoulder sling right now? If they continue to win games, is he a legit candidate for, you know, defensive player of the year?
Absolutely. I feel like the winning games thing doesn't really matter as much for like defensive players of the year as much as it would like MVP or something like that. But I don't know. Like, it seems like he's going to be on a top 4 playoff team on a top 8-ish defense and like inarguably the best player on that defense. So I think like absolutely. I won't say that he's like should be the favorite or even like the runner up, but I think he should absolutely be a candidate.
Yeah, I mean, like just off the top of my head, I know TJ Watt will get votes because he gets a ton of sacks, etc. Micah Parsons will probably get votes. I'm not sure, like other than Garrett, I'm not sure really who there is that's like right there in the running this year. So I absolutely think that it's a possibility for him, which is crazy to say. I mean, there was a point like 6 months ago, Gus, that people were freaking out that this dude wasn't showing up to voluntary practices. And now he's 2.5 sacks away from breaking the franchise single season record. There's a better chance of him hitting 20 sacks this year than there is of him not breaking the franchise single season record. He's now second all time in franchise in sacks. To me, like Trevor Lawrence is obviously the face and the pillar of the organization. I think Josh Allen has to be right there behind him. And I've been beating this drum all year, but I think he has to be there, Evan Engram, this offseason, to where it doesn't matter what vehicle they use, contract extension, franchise tag, it doesn't matter. He is on the team next season, no question about it, no ifs, ands, or buts.
I've been wanting the Jags to get like a premier receiver for pretty much since like 2020 or 2019, because even in like the Minshew era, I was like, even if Minshew doesn't stick around, like you can still have that receiver for the next guy. But so like I'm just trying to say I'm very – receiver friendly, as we all know with like my Ridley takes this year, but like I'm like absolutely on it where like even if it means that Ridley leaves the team, then like you have to not let Josh Allen walk out that door in the offseason.
I'm with you, and I will say like the fact that they're seemingly starting to get more production around him, like Trayvon didn't have a good day in terms of efficiency. Like, he didn't have many high-quality wins, but he still had 6 pressures yesterday, a career high, I think, for him. Mm-hmm. Robson Harris had a season high in pressures, so did Chase on. It seems like
– Leila Vaughn, I feel like it was his best game.
Man, he had CJ Stroud in hell on one play, man.
Like, one player that, like – every time you're like just starting to forget about him, he like reemerges and like makes some kind of like wacky play, and then you're like, "Oh yeah,
I don't forget." I guess my question to you is like, from this point on, like the rest of the season until the playoffs, the arrow can only point up for the defense, right? Like the only starting quality quarterback they play the entire rest of the season is Lamar Jackson. Baker Mayfield stinks. Bryce Young stinks. Will Levis stinks. Yeah. Jake Browning stinks. PJ Walker and DTR, they stink. Like, it's literally, like, it's not that Lamar Jackson's the only great quarterback they play left. He's not even the only good quarterback he's the only NFL quarterback that they have on the rest of the schedule.
Yeah. It's crazy. And, like, it stinks that they lost Mark Andrews, but, like, that makes him a little bit less of a threat. And like, I mean, Zay Flowers looks awesome and Odell looks better than I thought, but like, he's not going to even have his full arsenal. And then obviously the Browns and the Bengals aren't going to have their 2 starting quarterbacks that they had the beginning of the season. So yeah, the Jags are set up pretty well. I think that's probably like my favorite reason for like why Josh Allen is a good defensive player of the year candidate, is because like, there's a good chance he's able to just like rack up sacks against like the Bryce Youngs and Jake Browns of the world.
Yeah, it's like some bad offensive lines too. Like, again, Orlando Brown's a bad left tackle. Icky in Carolina hasn't been a good left tackle. We know the Titans situation. But like, Ronnie Stanley's been up and down, you know, because injuries have kind of really hampered him in recent years. The only good left tackle Josh Allen plays the rest of the year is Tristan Wirfs.
Every guy moves to the left side.
Yeah. he is good. So I'm with you. I think this defense and Josh Allen especially like have the opportunity to feast at it, a lot like the end of the year last year where they faced some bad quarterbacks at the end of the year to kind of
propel. I remember thinking like how fluky that was and like, oh, you're not going to face like a schedule that easy again. But it's like, I mean, this NFL season in general has been so weird with all the mid quarterback play and all the injuries. But yeah, it's wild. They're set up for success. They're in the driver's seat too, though. I think 99% chance to make the playoffs, according to the Times.
And that's based on like several like 100,000 simulations. So like, I'd love to see the simulations to have them not making the playoffs. Like, I just want, like, what exactly has to happen?
That'd genuinely be interesting. That'd be fine.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, one last thing before we move on to game balls, etc. I know we've done it a lot in recent weeks, but I want to give Devin Lloyd his flowers. He made several tackles yesterday that prevented big plays. Like, the Texans had zero running game, but Devin Lloyd was a big part of that. He had a lot of plays near the line of scrimmage. Like, it went from last year, it was almost a shock when he did make the tackle on first attempt, to this year, he's become like almost automatic, and the missed tackles are just way down. I thought Devin Lloyd had a fantastic game yesterday.
I agree. Yeah, I feel like the whole defensive line deserved a shout-out, which you already gave them, and then Devin Lloyd too.
And
yeah, I got nothing else to add. They did that without Devin Lloyd. Jeremiah.
And they did it without Devon Hamilton. Ledbetter, man. Ledbetter turned it up some. No, I was like saying, like, they did all that too without Devon Hamilton, who I know Hamilton hasn't looked like himself this season, etc. But regardless, it has not seemed like a defensive line that was ready to not have him the first half of the year. Toward the last 2 weeks, it seems like they haven't missed him, which is wild because he was, you know, he still is a good football player. Obviously, he's working himself back from, you know, his issues, but it definitely seems like this defensive line has kind of been able to replace, you know, his potential impact these last 2 weeks, which I wouldn't have had on my bingo card. Like, Jeremiah Ledbetter is like perfectly in that Corey Peters role. And
I was about to say Corey Peters last year, Jeremiah Ledbetter this year. You just got balky balled, John.
he knows where to find the diamonds. Diamonds in the rough. That's right. All right, guys. We're going to break real quick and then we'll be right back. All right, Gus, you have to give out a special teams game ball. All right?
You want me to lead with special teams?
Okay, first, do you have any takes that you would like to share with us?
Okay, takes first.
I'm lifting the veil of your takesmanship responsibilities being taken away. Let's hear it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got two written down. The first one is that Trevor Lawrence will finish second in MVP voting behind Dak Prescott this year.
Okay. That's what I'm talking about.
All right, let's go to DraftKings MVP odds. Right now, Pat Mahomes and Jalen Hurts are not tied, but they're like the two betting favorites. And then Lamar Jackson is right behind that. Pretty obvious candidates. Like, they're three of the most productive passers this year on three of the teams, like, with the best records this year. So that makes sense. But then after that, it's like, I mean, I think Dak might end up winning it, which is why I said him above Lawrence, because he's been, like, on a tear recently, and, like, the Cowboys offense very clearly runs through him and not the running game, even though, like, even Jerry Jones as recently as last year, I feel like, was like, oh, yeah, no, it still runs through Zeke. Zeke does everything for us. And then it's like, yeah, no, it was actually Dak this whole time. So on seed, which is a pretty big deal for MVP voting. So I think, like, Dak's pretty good long shot. And then, like, other than that, it's like Tua and Brock Purdy, which is like, is anyone that has an MVP vote going to, like, seriously cast on either of them? Maybe, but I would hope not. And then besides that, it's McCaffrey and Tyreek Hill, which I don't know, they both, like, probably deserve to be candidates. But, like, I'm just saying, like, the MVP case is, like, there's, like, not really any super obvious player. At this point in the season, so season second half of season stretch I did last year, and Lawrence has been incredible three of his last four games, especially the last two. And again, like, he had his best career game efficiency wise with like three, four drops. So I like, more than anything else though, like, nothing has really changed too much in terms of like his environment. And like, I could have said, like, as a hot take that he was going to win MVP before the season, but like, I don't know. I was working on my takesmanship. I don't want to put any takes out that I don't really mean, but like, Lawrence looks like an MVP. So I'm ready to say he's going to be top two in MVP voting.
No, I like that take. I think that's a good take. I do think people will vote for, I think Brock Purdy is going to win it, sadly. Yeah. And it'll be a sad day for the league. It'll be a sad day for the sport.
Yep.
It'll be a sad day for sports in general. My guess is Brock Purdy wins it. I like that take, Gus. I like it. I'll go ahead and give you mine. Jags will finish with the one seed. Doug Peterson wins coach of the year.
I was thinking about Peterson coach of the year, but I just feel like it's tough for non first year coaches, especially because like a lot, I don't know, like, I'm not saying he wouldn't deserve it if the Jags did get the one seed, but even if the Jags do get the one seed, like, coach of the year is such a BS.
If the Texans make it as the seven seed, I could see D'Amico getting it. But otherwise, like, I don't know. I feel like Mike McDaniel would have won it if, like, you vote for it in, like, October 1st, which another example, like, the Dolphins were playing insane the first month of the season. Now their offense has crashed back onto earth. They're another example of, like, why it's better to play it this time. You know, play better this time of year. So, good takes, Gus. Good takes all around. All right, game balls. Start off with special teams. I want you to start off with special teams. I'll go ahead and do my special teams. I'm going to go the uprights in Houston, Texas. Yeah. The crossbar.
That's good.
That's right.
Promise you, John. That's a good one. I originally was John Parker Washington, and then I knew you'd get mad.
No, so he had a great return.
He did have a great return. It's funny because, like, we were talking last week about, like, how the Jags ranked first in special teams DVOA going into last week and, like, how it's actually been, like, a pretty big deal, especially, like, Agnew, like, kind of swinging some games. So it's funny that, like, then after we talked about that, Parker Washington had a nice return of his own to potentially swing the game, but then the Jags went 3-and-out right after that 22-yard return. Yeah. So instead, my game ball goes to Logan Cook because he had two punts that landed at Houston's 9 and 11-yard line. So it was a good day.
I agree with that.
Logan.
All right, defensive game ball. I'm going to go – like, it's got to be Josh Allen, dude. Like, don't tell me – don't you dare tell me it's Monteric Brown or it's Tyler Lacy or something like that. It's got to be Josh Allen. Who else is it going to be?
My game is,
yeah,
my defensive game ball is us, because we said last week on the podcast that the Jags should drop and give Stroud time and not blitz Stroud. And I feel like if you go back and listen to the Friday show, like, we kind of like set out or like just said what the Jags were going to do. So I'm pretty sure Mike Caldwell gave the podcast a listen, made some tweaks to his game plan, and then went out there and executed. So, in all seriousness, I'm giving it to Mike Caldwell because I don't disagree with you about how Josh Allen deserves it, but I just thought, like, Mike Caldwell continues to show that he can game plan against, like, top offenses and top quarterbacks, and this was one of them. So,
I don't think that's a bad take. And then, offensively, Trevor Lawrence, obviously. I'm going to go Trevor Lawrence / Press Taylor. I don't care, dude. Second week in a row, Press Taylor, come get your game ball. Come on down. Put it in the trophy case. Tell Zach Taylor to suck it. He doesn't have any Jaguar Report game balls. I thought Press was in his Duffy, and I also thought that Trevor had one of his best games that I like of his life.
Yeah, I'm giving it to Trevor, but, like, man, both Jaguars coordinators coached their butts off. Like, I feel like the week three game, the Jaguars got out coached and outclassed a little bit. And so going into this game, I was like, I feel confident that the Jaguars have the more talented roster, and they should win, like, based on who has the better team. But, like, in the last game, Jacksonville's coaches got outcoached a little bit, and so it was definitely very good to see that they kind of, like, flipped the switch against a Houston coaching staff that's definitely very good in their own right.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that entirely. Like, one, like, the things I want to say, like, before we get off, too, is, like, I'm excited to watch this rivalry because I legitimately think it can be Hurts versus Dak, you know, Burrow versus Mahomes, Lamar versus Burrow, you know, like Josh Allen versus Mahomes. Like, I think Stroud versus Lawrence and the Jaguars versus Houston can be that exciting. Like, it's – Houston has all the pieces, like, to really look like, you know, one of the ascending teams moving forward. The Jaguars obviously a little bit ahead of them in terms of schedule, but, like, man, that game yesterday, like, that felt like it was a playoff game. You know, it was a heavyweight fight. Yeah. It meaningful November divisional football, late November football. That's what Houston fans have wanted. That's what Jacksonville fans have wanted. Like, it was the 44th time those two teams have met, and it was only the second time that both have been over 500. That's insane. The biggest game in this rivalry's history, and I don't think it's going to stop. So I'm excited to watch this little rivalry develop.
It's cool because they're what, like the oldest and the third much success at all. So it is pretty cool. And also,
I'm with you. I like Tennessee. I think, like, the future looks very bleak. I don't know what there is to be excited about in Tennessee for the next couple of years. Like, congrats, you're going to draft an offensive tackle in the top five. Next year, I'll put some butts in the seats.
That was low key so mean. If I, like, happen to be a Titans fan, that would actually make me so sad.
That's what they have to be excited about. Like, whoopee! Like, Indy, I think, has, like, Richardson's sample size was super small, but I was impressed by him. I think they can be excited for him despite potentially needing the NFL to step in terms of their owner. I'll say 2.5 exciting teams in the AFC South right now, which is about 1.5 more than they normally have.
Yep. No, totally fair. I totally agree.
Yeah. So
I got one last parting take for you, which is Evan Engram is a drag route merchant. What does he do, man? What does he do?
He should have caught his first touchdown. I said Trevor missed him.
When?
He had a rare end zone target.
I missed it. I must have been on my computer or something.
Trevor missed him.
Oh, the one that went over him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that's his fault. He should have got it.
All right. No. Evan Engram is going to miss a game, and we're going to see Luke Farrell and Bryn Strange step into that role, and then I want you to have the same energy.
Okay. That's fair. But, like, I didn't realize that you had an end zone target, so I'm just, like, sitting here to myself, and, like, Doug was so good at, like, scheming stuff up for Zach Ertz and Philly. It's like, even though, like, the tight end carryover narrative, you can at least, like, do something for Engram if you think he's worth it. So I guess good for you, Evan, earning your first end zone target of the year last week.
The tight ends had 8 catches for 104 yards yesterday.
Did Schultz have a big game?
Did he play? All right. Okay. Wait. What? He had 1 catch for 2 yards. What was your Schultz take?
But he dropped one. I tried to do a balky ball on you of, like, would you rather have paid Dalton Schultz $6 million and get 5 touchdowns this year?
No.
0 touchdowns.
No, I wouldn't have. He sucks.
Yeah, no. It worked about as poorly the second time around, so we can just go out here.
Hey, Damian Pierce had a big game. He almost averaged 2 yards per carry. That's nice for him this year.
You won the Damian Pierce thing. You don't have to keep victory lapping.
I just want you to keep acknowledging. I just want you to keep acknowledging it. Speaking of Gators, I'm not letting you off the hook. I'm not letting you off the hook. Speaking of Gators, what happened in the swamp,
dude? They're so good at this gate. Like 2023 Gators team is a team I've like never seen before, in like terms of like giving you hope during the game. That's like, oh, like they actually might be able to pull this off, and then like losing a close one late. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. I don't know what to say other than that.
I thought they were going to win because I thought a Tom Petty song in the fourth quarter would make a backup quarterback vomit all over himself and forcibly, you know, forfeit the game. That's what I had been told all season. So, nonetheless.
All right, Johnny, you got your Gators digging.
Gators game ball, the swamp, for another rousing home field advantage versus a team that isn't Charlotte.
For you. We're a basketball school.
So juicy.
I'm seeing some
more. Hey, I will say though, what's the biggest difference between UCF and Florida?
Higher academic standards.
One of them is bowl eligible.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Higher academic standards. We're talking about football here. Things that matter. Well, get your doctor.
I love that line.
Yeah, yeah. Get your doctors and your scientists and all of that, and your engineers, and get out of here. This is a sports world.
We got here.
Yeah.
Gators communications department.
No, don't get me started. On that note, Gus, you got anything else for us before we boogie out of here until Friday?
Nah, man. Let's boogie.
All right. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll be back on Friday to preview Monday Night Football. Until then, don't forget, Nick Caserio, you've been masterclassed.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.